You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to show number 294. Today is Sunday, April 19th, 2015, and my name is Steve. No Hammy tonight, but I am joined by Curtis, so let's go. Tonight's show is sponsored by Front Row Seats, our first ever sponsor, so we'd love for you to use them if you're looking for Braves tickets. And you will get them at the best price online, guaranteed. Use discount code ABT at the Front Row Seats checkout page, and you won't pay any service fees. Visit FrontRowSeatsLLC.com or download the Front Row Seats mobile app today. That's FrontRowSeatsLLC.com. So, Curtis, in tonight's show, we'll discuss the contributions of the new veterans on the team, the platoon at third, and the back end of the rotation. But first, we're 2 weeks in, 8-4. How much or how little does this team and their results mirror what you thought you'd see from them before the season began?
I of course thought that Tyron Wynwood would be good. I don't think I knew that Shelby Miller would be as good as he has been. And you figured that obviously they constructed the lineup so they wouldn't strike out so much and all those kind of small ball-y type of things that we talked about so much. I felt like that after we saw what happened this spring that the back end of the bullpen was going to be pretty solid. But, there's so much that I really didn't see coming out of this team. They're fifth in homers. Certainly didn't see that coming. They're not grounding into double plays. They're not striking out with men on base. They have the second most sacrifices in Major League Baseball.
It's insane. I saw that Steve Hummer had an article today. They have one error through two weeks. The Nationals have 14.
Yeah. That is truly insane. Never thought that this team would be so adept defensively. They're a surprise. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And every day that kind of goes by, you wonder. Toronto's a good team. The Braves have not played an easy schedule to this point by any stretch of the imagination. I know that Miami's record is awful, but I don't think they're a bad team. I think they're a very good team. Maybe they're just getting off to a slow start, but. I'm more than pleasantly surprised by what we've seen from the team. And every day that goes by, I keep more and more thinking, wow, this is something that could be sustainable.
Yeah, I mean, my two big concerns coming into the season, no big surprise, was the offense and the bullpen. And the offense, obviously, the first week was great. The offense then really scared the hell out of me in those last two games against the Marlins at home. There was that two-run performance in the awful Cahill game, and then the three-hit performance in the day game, that Wednesday game. And that three-hit performance, I was like, this is the real Braves. We're not gonna score any runs. The true colors of all these replacement-level guys and well-traveled veterans, it's here now. This is what the season's going to look like. And then they go into Toronto and score 8 runs on 12 hits, 5 runs on 9 hits, 5 runs on 8 hits. Like, this team looks like its offense could really be something. And the bullpen has really continued to be amazing. It's surprising after the first week to say my biggest concern may be Jim Johnson, who had two miserable appearances in a row because, all his pitches, he was just leaving his pitches up. I mean, he's a sinker baller who was leaving his pitches up, and hopefully Roger can fix that. But really, you look at the bullpen, who scares you? Sugar Ray is kind of an unknown entity, and that was a terrible, slow pitch he left up.
Well,
in the game.
He shouldn't have been in that.
No doubt he shouldn't have been in there. But, Kniff has continued to be amazing. Cody Martin, amazing. Grilly, amazing. Avilan hasn't given up a run yet. McIrahan, is that right? I may have totally butchered that.
That's me knocking on wood.
Yeah, I know. He had a nice appearance today. He's not been bad. The bullpen looks pretty good. I mean, this has been a really surprising 2 weeks.
Well, and even despite a lot of concerns about where these guys would fall in the lineup, there is some you know, some stability that's kind of coming to that. I know that he continues to shuffle the lineup almost daily, but, you know, for a while there, we had the second worst number two hitter in baseball, and it's basically because Jace Peterson was batting second so much. He's now, of course, been relegated to the back end of the lineup. But, you know, I mean, you kind of – and it also helps that for the first time ever, we actually have, like, DHs, and I don't know if that was part of any sort of planning. I mean, I know that that's a stretch because, obviously, we don't use the DH that much over the course of the year, but it's been shocking how bad the DH – position has been for the Braves. And you saw the DH was more productive in this three-game series than it was the entirety of last year. And today we had Freddie Freeman as our DH. So, you know, it's just
part of it's that the bench is actually hitting. I mean, the bench didn't hit at all last year. The bench was a disaster.
Awful. Yeah, awful. I mean, Kelly Johnson is still, but he got a huge home run to tie that game the other night. So
yeah, Kelly either has a game-changing home run or pops out with the bases loaded.
Right.
And really more of the latter than the former.
Sure.
But okay. You know, back to the bullpen for a minute. After the Sugar Ray appearance yesterday in the 10th, Freddie came out today and said, you know, I really need to rethink this, and maybe we use our closer, our best pitcher in the bullpen, in the high leverage situation in the game, even if it's not the save on the road, which is incredible. Now, he caveated it by saying, I'm only thinking that because of the composition of the bullpen, and there's a lot of young guys we need to play to its strengths. But it's amazing, you know, even with the caveat, it is amazing that he's even considering it. And, you know, people give Freddie a hard time about it, but really no managers do it in baseball.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
no one's doing it.
And you wonder if he says that if Kimbrel is still sitting out there.
Well, yeah, I mean, if Kimbrel's out there, the complexion of the bullpen is much different, too. But for him to be even entertaining it, I think, is frankly another big surprise from this year.
Absolutely.
All right, so Kurt, the grizzled veterans were brought here, I think, job one for the culture change. There was clearly a lot of, you know, a lack of leadership in the clubhouse last year when the losing started. No one stepped up and can kind of get the guys going again. But let's look at their numbers to assess their on-field contribution. So we'll pick the three main ones. Johnny Gomes, his slash line is .261, .333, .565, two homers. A.J. Pierzynski, .300, .364, .750. And Grilly, 6 out of 6 saves, a .067 whip. I mean, like, all the soft stuff is great, right? And there was an interesting article in the AJC today. As Freddie was preparing to be a DH for the first time, he talked to Gomes, and Gomes was like, look, when we're playing defense, stand up, move around, sort of pretend, you know, move through the game as if you're playing defense. And Freddie attributed his performance today to taking that piece of advice. So I know that there's a contingent out there that doesn't want to hear anything about small ball or the leadership in the clubhouse, but there's something to what's going on here. And the start over the 2 weeks, I think. But to couple that with the fact that these guys are performing, like, you know, Freddie is using them strategically, like Pierzynski, like Gomes, but they are, you know, their performance is really altering in a positive way the outcome of these games.
And which adds even more to it. We'll see how long this goes, but it's... they're walking the walk and talking the talk. I hate that cliche, but the weight is so much more if you're producing on the field. I mean, it's easy to be a rah-rah guy, Eric Hinsky type of guy who we all love. But I mean, how terrible was Eric Hinsky the last year he was here? So right. Was his message getting lost in the fact that, hey, these are the approaches you need to take because look at me, I'm batting .112 and striking out every time I go up there, you know? So the impact of what they're saying even has more merit as they contribute on the field than as they are vastly productive as part of what the start that the Braves have gotten off to. I mean, I that was part of my concern, is it's like, well, it's great you bring in these guys and they're for the culture, but
you know. But they're going to be total stiffs.
Yeah,
on the field.
They're going to be awful, and so that's great. And obviously that's important that you change the dynamic of how young players approach the game, but to what end? And now we see that this is the end here right now, so it's great.
So, by the way, speaking of Grilly's 6 out of 6 saves and 0.067 whip, here's my cheap shot of the night. That Kimbrel is 4 out of 4 saves. He has a loss because he was brought in extra innings yesterday, Saturday, in a tie game and gave up the lead, got a loss. And his whip is 1.42.
He's terrible.
He's awful. Look at how much better off we are.
Bum.
All right, so sort of staying in the same vein, Kurt. Markakis, in the offseason or during the spring, suggested to Freddie to put in a pool table in the clubhouse and allow music in the clubhouse. And it has happened. Freddie has allowed both those things. These are not Bobby's Braves anymore, Kurt.
Which might be a good thing. It's great that Freddie was up for making these moves. And I think after last year and the disaster was that last year and what they're trying to do, melding these older players, these veteran players with all these young players, you have to do these types of things. Maybe it's all cosmetic, but you know, it's also psychological, and whatever helps, whatever you have to take that approach. I also think it's more telling also that we talked about this a lot last year, that Freddie has no leadership in this clubhouse. I mean, you know, that he is completely taking direction from these guys because he really doesn't know how to take the same approach himself as far as you know, setting a path towards something more successful for the dynamic of the team. I mean,
but big kudos to Freddie for allowing it and seeing the wisdom in it and trying something new and all that.
Yeah, and you wonder if he had to go through channels to make sure that was cool with Bobby and with John Hart and with other people, because they seem so stayed with their ways as well, that maybe this, you know, this is the whole thing. It's a whole paradigm shift for these top level guys that they just have to take a different approach. And these guys seem much looser. I mean, we've had great veterans here in the past who all seems very buttoned up. Tom Glavine, Greg Maddux, guys like that. Not that they weren't having fun, but they were much more, I don't know what the word is, cerebral. And certainly that is not the case with these guys. They all have big beards and they're all, you know, kind of much looser seeming characters. And maybe that's the face that they're trying to put on this team right now.
Yeah. And it's not like Bobby's way was bad, for God's sakes.
No.
You know, yeah. Every player to a man says best manager I ever worked for.
Sure. Of course.
However, with so many new faces on the team and so much youth on the team, to sort of allow that camaraderie of a pool table and to let folks play their music and sort of police themselves, you know, part of it is, you know, I've heard stories over the years of fights because of music in the clubhouse and, you know, sort of there's divisions around it. And for the players to be empowered to have it and to be trusted to have it, like, I get it. None of this stuff is going to raise anyone's on-base percentage. It's not going to drive in runners in scoring position. But the season is a huge, long grind. And if any of this helps that, then more power to him and you know, good for the front office. It really may be Hart's influence, Kurt. To your point, Schuerholz and Bobby, clearly they've been in lockstep forever. But maybe it's John Hart. If they really did have to go through channels, it was him saying, guys, let's try something a little different.
Yeah, and they have so many young guys on this team that weren't around, obviously, for Bobby. So, you know, why kind of keep something that they're not familiar with if they're used to these other things from other clubhouses and from other organizations where they've come from?
Yeah. All right, so Kurt, next up, a new segment on the show. But first, a quick word from Front Row Seats. Get the best deals on Braves tickets online. Visit frontrowseatsllc.com and use discount code ABT, and you won't be charged any service fees. Again, that's frontrowseatsllc.com. All right, Kurt, let's play for or against I think it's pretty explanatory. So, Kurt, for or against all the platooning with Chris Johnson and Kai Ospo that's going on at third?
I'm for it. I think that which we'll get to in a moment, the second base position. I'm going to sound like I'm contradicting myself. I do want some of these guys to establish themselves as the everyday player. But as we see with a bunch of these guys, they're not everyday players. And so platooning them is probably the best way to get everything that you can out of them. So I'm all for it. And if it motivates Chris Johnson to perform better on the field, like we were just talking about, whatever it takes, because he's certainly off to a much better start than he was last year, I'm all for it. Four.
Yeah, so, you know, the heading into today, the slash line from our third baseman combined in these first 2 weeks is 325, 378, 450. So in that regard, you really can't argue for the about that production from third base. So I'm very much for it. And also, if Chris Johnson was exposed as an everyday player last year, which I think you could pretty easily argue, and the team continues to want to trade him, you know that it was going on all through spring training, and if the opportunity arises, I think that they will trade him between now and the trade deadline, then maybe minimizing his appearances so he is not so exposed makes it easier to trade him and makes him look a little better. I'm all for it.
Let's just not talk about this center field platooning.
God, there's been so much more Maben than I would have expected. Not that EY was tearing it up. And, you know, someone on Twitter was like, oh, Maben is twice the player that EY Jr. is. And I'm like, really? You know, and his response was, yeah, he's been injured a lot, and let's really see what we get. I mean, he's hit a couple home runs. He's not been anything special either. I mean, yes, center field is a bit of a problem. I haven't looked at Malik Smith's stats these first 2 weeks, but, you know, hopefully something might happen there, because I think long-term that won't be so good.
Yeah.
All right, so next up, for or against Peterson's playing time. And, Kurt, I'll go first, so I'm against it. The first thing that kind of surprised me was when I was thinking how many games has he started, before I looked it up, I was like, yeah, it's probably half. It's like six. He's actually started 8 of 12. And his slash line is kind of awful. I mean, it's 212, 278, 273. But I really think that he can be a important piece of the offense this year. He's already playing great defense. I mean, and as part of the, you know, that one lone error that we've had this year. I want him to be out there more. I want him to see more major league pitching and figure some of it out. I just think he should be out there more. I think he should be out there more. Kiospo's been real good, but let's see Kiospo maybe more at third and get Peterson out there.
So you're against limiting Peterson's playing time?
I'm against limiting Peterson's playing time.
Yeah, I guess it depends on where you want to go with this season. And you know, with all the back and forth about rebuilding and reconfiguring and restructuring and all this kind of stuff. I mean, I think you're right in the fact that the long term, the best thing to do is just have him out there. We can figure out what kind of player he's going to be. And, you know, obviously we have Peraza waiting, so we figure out what Peterson has to offer us. But it's the short term that we want to win more games. So, and I'm kind of torn. It's like, obviously I want us to win more games now, but I get the argument about giving him more playing time. So I guess I'm for platooning him some, but I totally get your point.
All right, man, last one, for or against the construction of the back end of the starting rotation?
Yeesh, it is definitely the back end of the rotation. I'm against it, but I don't know what you can do about it. I would give these guys a couple more starts and then start looking at Cody Martin. I don't think they're going to bring anybody up necessarily, but you can certainly move Stoltz to the bullpen as a long reliever. But they're awful. There were some stats. They obviously are 0-2. They've given up 11 runs in 12 innings. They have combined an 8.05 ERA. They've had 15 base runners. And not that it's a fair comparison, but last year our 4-5 which consisted mostly of Wood, Floyd, and Hale, over the course of the season went 12-13 with a 2.16 ERA. They averaged 6 1/3 in their 39 starts. Stoltz and Cahill have gone 12 innings combined in their three starts. So it's ugly. And that, I think, is one thing that will continue to crop up, pop up this year that will kind of inhibit us from going on long winning streaks, is that once you get to the 4 and 5, they're just going to be bad.
Yeah, I was at the stadium for Cahill's start earlier this week, and it was so ugly. I mean, he wasn't fooling anyone. They were just tattooing every pit. It was just awful. It was awful. And so, yes, I don't know how you can be anything but against it. And I really don't get the Cahill move. And I know that's kind of convenient after he had a terrible start, but I think it's okay for the Braves, particularly with their payroll, to try to get cute and think that Roger can work his sinker ball magic on like a $1 million middle reliever. But to do it, to risk $5.5 million on a starter, like, this thing will, this really can come back and bite them, right? Wouldn't you rather have David Hale right now instead of Cahill? David Hale, who we traded for a catching prospect?
Right.
Or both Stoltz and Wandy right now? I mean, at least with Stoltz and Wandy, you've got lowish money, meaning the risk is lower, and it allows you to bring up the kids if they don't work out. With Cahill and $5.5 million, at a minimum, we'll see 4 or 5 starts from Cahill before they even consider doing
it. Well, and add to that the wear and tear that's going to be taken out of the bullpen.
On the bullpen.
And absolutely. I know that, and again, I know it's easy to say, but how much did Aaron Harang sign for?
5. Did he sign for 5? Yeah.
I don't even think it was that much. I was thinking it was more like 4. But
yeah, I think it was 1 year 5.
But still.
Well, for sure. and, you know, I disagree, Kurt. I think that we will see Folty or Whistler or Banuelos before they move Cody Martin. Cody Martin, a bit of a victim of his own success, is such an important key in the bullpen right now, a bullpen that's, you know, kind of thin. It's working out. But imagine how thin the bullpen would feel if you took Cody out and put a somewhat shaky Stoltz in there. Because Cody's not just the long man. I mean, Cody came in the 8th inning today and faced, Bautista and Josh Donaldson. Right? Isn't Donaldson the guy that hit the homer yesterday? Donaldson.
In this series.
And Encarnacion. I mean, that's who Cody Martin faced today. And in 4 batters, got 3 outs and got out of it. I mean, so I actually think we see one of the kids up from AAA before they move Cody into the starting rotation.
Yeah, maybe so.
All right, folks, our last word of the night from Front Row Seats. Don't forget to get the best deals on Braves tickets online. Visit frontrowseatsllc.com, use discount code ABT, and you won't be charged any service fees. Again, frontrowseatsllc.com. All right, Curtis, let's move on to Shot in the Dark, our crazy prediction for the coming week. And we'll start with our listener pick for Shot in the Dark from last week. It was from Brandon Dilbeck on Twitter. He predicted that the Braves would go 4-2 this week and not hit any home runs.
Whoops.
Yeah, whoops. So not quite. The Braves hit 9 home runs this week, which is
crazy.
Still just insane, and went 3-for-3. All right, so Curtis, before we predict this coming week, let's check back on last week. So last week, Kurt, you had Freeman with 1 home run, 3 doubles, batting .340. He had 3 home runs, 1 double, and batted .272.
That's what I meant.
Ham had Przinski hitting 2 home runs. He had 1. And, I mean, you know, we can really just crown me the winner already. I predicted that Cahill would pitch 8 innings of 2-run ball.
And he went, it was 2 innings of 8-hit ball?
2 1/3, 4 earned.
Yeesh.
Yeah, so Kurt, you take it this week.
Nice.
You were closest, so congratulations. We had no winner last week. You lead the month. With
in the
one
clubhouse.
Victory. Yeah, exactly. All right, so Kurt, this week, what do you got?
Markakis, like it. He's going to keep hot. 320, 3 doubles.
Yeah, Markakis was amazing in Toronto this weekend. My goodness. All right. So in the Mets series, where Cahill and Stoltz have the first two starts, Cahill and Stoltz will combine to give up three or less earned runs, and the Braves are going to win both games. I know. Well, it's called shot in the dark.
Is it that's like reverse psychology, like what you did last week with Cahill?
Yeah, something like that. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
All right, Kurt, let's look at the week ahead. So the road trip continues. Three in New York against the 8-in-a-row winning Mets, and three in Philly. I think, now, yesterday this was true. I don't know if it's true today. The Mets yesterday had the best record in baseball.
Yeah, I thought I saw that somebody was 10-2. They're 10-3.
Okay.
And maybe it's the night game, whoever's 10-2. And now, of course, they have all those built-in rainout days early in the year, which if they played in Atlanta every day, they would have already used all of those days up. So,
did you see that today Travis d'Arnaud was hit by a pitch and broke his hand?
Hey.
So d'Arnaud gone. And then I don't remember his name, but one of their relievers was, I think, struck by a batted ball. But he got a fracture in his forearm or something. Like the Mets, it was a bad day for the Mets despite their win.
Harvey was overpowering, I think, though.
No, Harvey gave up four today.
Oh, was he?
Yes, he did.
I don't know. Maybe
he was
overpowering
in his last one.
I was watching the Hawks game. I don't even know what I'm talking about.
All right, so let's look at the matchups this week. So Cahill Neese, who held us to one run earlier and has a 1.59 ERA to start the year.
I think I should get extra credit for once again calling Dan Heron the Brave Killer, as he totally dominated us.
Boy, he really did. Followed by Stoltz and G, who we knocked around for five runs and has an ERA over seven. The final game in New York is Tehran versus Cologne, who gave up three earned against us, but only one in each of his two other starts. And yes, we miss Matt Harvey for the second series in a row.
And we get to face all those guys. We're probably better off facing Harvey.
All right, so then on to Philly. We have Wood Harang, who, of course, has an under 2 ERA. And then Miller Buchanan, whose ERA is over 9. Finishing up with Cahill. We get two Cahills this week.
Huge.
Yeah, Cahill Williams and his over 4 ERA. So, Curtis, what do the Braves do this week?
I'm going 3-3, 1-2, 2-1.
All right, I'm going 4-2. We sweep in New York and lose 2 in Philly.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. But my goodness, just to reiterate, what a great 2-week start.
Yeah.
Given everything we were expecting and all the predictions and sort of the team on paper, unbelievable start. You know, we're in second place.
And so much more fun to watch.
Oh, so much more fun to watch.
Even the game they blew. DOB had some stats, and it was that last year, the first seven games, the Braves had scored two or fewer runners in four games and were shut out twice.
Right, right. And to come back, you know, the Braves came back in that game Saturday. They ended up losing, but again, a lineup that I didn't think was built to come back. You know, forget, you go down, you're really going to be in trouble. And this team is coming back some this year, too. It's just good sign after good sign so far.
Yeah. Well, and it's all the things that they weren't last year. The Ks with runners on, the Ks overall, you know, all that type of stuff. They're not grounding into double plays. Those things that just killed them last year, time and time and time and time again.
Yeah. All right, let's keep it going. And that is the show. So everyone, please make sure you have us in your RSS feeds or subscriptions on iTunes or Stitcher so that you don't miss any of our weekly shows. And as always, check us out at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com for past shows, to check out our blogs, and to post in our comment section. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at @ATLBaseballTalk and to like us on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, everyone, and go Braves!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com. Had to admit the problem.